This is Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. Residents here in Northwest Indiana are going to have an opportunity to find out more about ideas that could be some potential residential or business development areas that are being proposed around where the South Shore Line train stations are. And to find out more about it, let's check in with the Northwest Indiana Regional Development Authority and with Sherry Ziller. She's the Chief Development Officer for the organization. Thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Chris. Good to be with you and to talk about our work on the Transit Development District.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. And for folks that are not familiar with what are called Transit Development Districts, what are they and how do they fit into the scheme of things that the RDA is looking into here?
Sure. So I would say the RDA leads the initiative on developing what we call the Transit Development District, but we commonly call them by their acronym, so TDD, but Transit Development District, which are essentially the drawing of a boundary, a half a mile, and then we can expand it up to a mile around each of the South Shore stations, and that would be the existing stations and then the proposed Westlake stations. We have a TDD steering committee that meets every quarter, and we have representation from each of the stations that a TDD could be drawn. So the intent of that is to draw the boundary, like I said, a half a mile first, in a way that will produce the best return both currently and in the future. So it's important that that we capture the most current and potential new developments in the boundary and even the current development that's in there, because then that increment collected, property tax, income tax, even sales tax, but the sales tax does go to the state. So that increment can then be used to further the development at our South Shore stations. So any increment that's collected in a district goes right back to the district for all TOD planning, and then the implementation, of course, of the boundary. And then we're able to work with developers, and we've been in constant communication with many of our communities to get a better handle on what development is likely to occur. How we can get development to occur and how we can entice developers to be interested in our communities.
Now, you mentioned here at the outset of our conversation about setting up these transit development districts and primarily along the Westlake Corridor, which is the newest section of the South Shore Line that's going to be built from the current line, which runs east and west, and it comes down, of course, through Hammond all the way south down into Dyer. What are some of the places that these districts may be set up? What areas are we looking at when you take this southbound leg, so to speak, all the way down?
Wherever the proposed areas are, and I probably don't know them off the top of my head where they are, but South Hammond is over by 173rd, and then you have kind of more the Hammond Gateway Station, which isn't quite downtown, but it's a few miles north of that, and then Dyer is kind of over by Main Street, and Munster, you do have it's kind of by Ridge Road over
right.
there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the Westlake stations are. But I can get you the intersections. I just don't know them at the top of my head.
It's an idea of just, you know, the areas that we know that are likely to be the best places to do the kind of development that you're looking at for these districts, right?
Yeah, it would be wherever those proposed stations are that NICTI has, and then we would draw it. So it doesn't have to be a perfect circle, but we would look at the statute allows us to draw that boundary a half a mile around each station, and it doesn't have, like I said, does not have to be a perfect circle, and we kind of say it in a way, it sounds kind of odd, but it can be an amoeba shape. So that the intent of that is to capture the most potential for the return on investment there.
Now we're talking too for the double tracking segment of the project, which of course is expanding the line to double tracking between Gary and Michigan City. We're talking about around the current stations, right? We're talking about in Miller and Ogden Dunes and over in Michigan City proper too, right?
It actually, so it includes all the double track stations, and then it actually does include South Bend, so we can go as far. We go right to the end of the line.
Well, that'd be interesting because we know that, there's lots of open land on the far end because the South Shore line ends at the South Bend Airport. And so there's plenty of, I'm sure, development over there that not only that the South Shore line would like to take advantage of, but the city of South Bend would too.
Yeah, definitely. And we do think that South Bend has a ton of potential over there, and we can generate some developer interest. And, you know, we work with our team. We work with Policy Analytics. We work with MKSK, and we work with KPMG, and the services that we provide on this project is we do a lot of the planning work for our communities, and then we do we test the market to see what the market can bear. So that's where KPMG comes into it, and then when we do that, we do then our analysis on the best return on investment, so the highest and best use of that land that you're talking about. We conduct that analysis, not just in South Bend, but all along the stations in Indiana.
Tell us a little bit about MKSK, as they're known. They're a designing and planning firm, and that's the firm that you are working with, I guess, the most in working locally to get things plotted out for these transit development districts.
So they're providing the planning for all of the stations. They are out of, I want to say, Ohio, but they've done work all along the Midwest. So they're, they're the planners for all of our stations here. So they're looking at the land and they're looking at the best use of it. And they're going to help us. They're going to be the ones that really help us hone in and draw the boundaries. And then that works in conjunction with KPMG and then also Policy Analytics. To determine what that increment can be, because we want to try to produce the highest increment. So it is kind of this process here where we need to know what we're looking at. So the planners come in and tell us exactly what we're looking at. They tell us, how many story buildings, is it that we're interested in, and what is the zoning regulation. So they'll look at what is currently zoned at, and then they'll also look at what another potential use could be there. So just, kind of rearranging things and giving our community something else to look at, different scenarios to look at, and then getting our community's reaction from there. So that's kind of the process in a nutshell.
Now, you mentioned that in these, what they call TDDs, that they're about a half mile or so range around the stations. If there are any issues involving zoning, say there's an area that is not, as it's set up now, just happens to be in a residential area. Michigan City is a good example of that. 11th Street, the train tracks go right through residential neighborhoods. And if these districts may want to say there might be some good development for, say, business or that sort, there's going to have to be some rezoning. Do they have to do some serious work with the local planners, the plan commissions and the boards of zoning appeals and all that to be able to get these changes ready so that developers can take advantage of them?
Sure, that's a great question. So how it's currently zoned now is something that we're working with. So that's part of this process. So we need to understand what it's zoned as. And if through this process, when working with the leadership at the communities, and even when we go out for the public engagement, if we receive feedback that, maybe it could be a better use of that, then that is something that we look at. And the zoning authority still rests with our communities. That's not something that the RDA necessarily has jurisdiction or any authority over, for that matter. It's simply a recommendation.
They'll have to consult with them, I suppose. If there are questions, they'll consult with the local planning people if there are questions that come up, I assume.
I'm sorry, what was that?
There'll be questions that'll come up, I'm sure, and they'll be consulting with those people in particular still, right?
Yeah. The RDA is simply there to say, we've conducted some analysis, we've looked at this, we have some ideas, we believe that, it's zoned correctly, and, we're going to love working with this, and we can do a lot here, or, if it can be zoned differently, here's our recommendation, here's our proposal, and kind of, work with them through the process.
We're talking with Sherry Ziller. She's the Chief Development Officer for the Northwest Indiana Regional Planning Authority. We're talking about the idea of what are called transit development districts that are going to be set up as part of the work that will be done in expanding and creating new lines for the South Shore Line. Sherry, can you give us an idea, first off, what kind of public meetings have been held up to now, and how will the general public be able to actually get involved in this?
We're going to be able to go out to public here, we think, in the month of September. So right now we've been conducting a lot of our work with the communities. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Michigan City, Munster, Dyer, Portage, Ogden Dunes, East Chicago, Hammond, pretty much all of them, to be honest. And the next part of our process here is to engage the public. So when we had our steering committee meeting last week, we did introduce the concept. So we are looking at September, and I think we'll probably try to do just a few communities that we're a little bit further along with, I would say Michigan City, Munster, Dyer, Portage, and Ogden Dunes. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be able to do two public engagement sessions, and we'll introduce what we're calling the study areas. And we want the public's feedback there. So we want to, you know, make sure, hey, did we get it right? Is there something else we should be looking at? What are your thoughts? What would you like to see? What sort of buildings? What sort of look and feel? Give us some examples from places that you visited. And then we take all that into consideration. And then we'll go back to the public and we'll present to them kind of a final draft of what we, you know, what we were able to incorporate from their feedback. And then we follow the public process thereafter. So mm-hmm. that would be part one. There's a few other parts with that the RDA Board of Directors would be very much involved in. We'll have some public hearings. We'll have some public meetings. And then we go to the State Budget Committee to present our package to them.
Do you think that
to get their sign off?
Do you think Sherry, if things go well, that the public hearings and discussion and the like will wrap up sometime yet this calendar year? That the State Budget Committee will get a chance to take a look at it? Maybe when the lawmakers are back in session in January.
We're sure going to try, Chris. We understand, you know, the public health crisis here, and mm-hmm. that's going to push us back a little bit. So that's why we've been having individual conversations with the communities to see what they're comfortable with and to see, you know, what the RDA is comfortable with. We want to make sure that we are getting the most public involvement that we possibly can, but we also want to make sure that everyone's safe. So we've come up with some hybrid approaches that we're working with MKSK. We're floating those ideas with the communities. So if they wanted to be there in person, they could. And then we can also set up some online components for the public to view some information that we can share with them, submit some inquiries, submit their thoughts, so we can cast the widest net possible, given the you know, parameters that we're working within these days. But our hope is to get that started in the month of September.
Sherry Ziller is the Chief Development Officer for the Northwest Indiana Regional Development Authority. We've been finding out more about the process that's underway to draft, create, and put out for public review what are called transit development districts, and they're part of the expansion that's going to happen on the South Shore Line. And Sherry, thank you for being with us to talk about it today.
Chris, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Coming up in September and into the rest of the months following, Purdue University Northwest is going to be offering through its faculty members an interesting series of lecture discussions, which are entitled Race, Racism, Anti-Racism. And in general, because of our issues here, not only in Northwest Indiana, but around the nation and the world, this is a very appropriate topic. Faculty members from the College of Humanities, Education, and Social Sciences are going to be involved in this. It's a way to learn more about activists who are basically risking their lives for the sake of social justice. The series of discussions will begin on September 3rd, and you'll be able to see it. It'll be available by Zoom or Facebook Live as you choose to be able to join in. It's a free series of events. It's virtual, open to the public, And the first one, as we mentioned, is going to begin on Thursday, September 3rd, and it'll be the Return of Black-Led Grassroots Politics. And Glenn Ford, the executive director of Black Agenda Report, is going to be doing that. And our guest today is going to be doing the one following that. It's called Race and Wrongful Convictions. And Professor Nikki Jackson, who is a professor of criminal justice, is going to be joining Roosevelt Glenn, who is an exoneree, on this topic. And by the way, the conversation is going to be in the Zoom on Tuesday, October 6th, as part of the series. And Dr. Jackson, thank you for joining us here today on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your interest, which is very deep, in the subject of wrongful conviction.
About 4.5 years ago, I read an article in the newspaper about a gentleman who had been wrongfully convicted for 24 years for crimes that he had not been committed. And I had to meet this gentleman, so I reached out to the reporter, and who then connected me to his attorney, and I met with Mr. Donald and sat down with him, I think a day or two after, and heard of what his journey has been like and how he lost 24 years of his life for crimes that he never committed. The guy had never even had a speeding ticket, to the best of my knowledge. So I had made some promises to Mr. Donald that I was going to be his voice and help make some change. And it was at that point that I started doing some research and recognizing that so many African-American males have been wrongfully convicted. And I also learned that most of our wrongful convictions in the state of Indiana had come from Lake County. And that was really bothersome as a professor at Purdue Northwest, which is housed in Lake County, and wanted to better understand what was taking place. So I started this journey, and it's a very long journey, but made some changes, and one of the changes that I wanted to see was a compensation bill for folks who had been wrongfully convicted in the state of Indiana. And thankfully, got some senators to listen and state reps, and we now have a bill in the state of Indiana which will offer compensation to exonerees. The bill is not perfect, and we're still in works with some modification requests, but we'll see how that goes. So that's really how I started this journey, and I've learned a great deal about wrongful convictions. I have spent the past 2 to 3 months now interviewing exonerees throughout the country. I've interviewed about 40 or 50 exonerees, male, female, Hispanic, African-American, white, and just learning more about their ordeals.
Have you found that being an advisory board member at both the Indiana State Prison in Michigan City and also at the Westville Correctional Center has not only helped keep you up to date with what is happening, but has helped offer the help that you may need in talking with people to get them to talk about what their issues are?
Well, it's interesting. As an advisory board member through the Indiana State Prison and Westville Correctional Center, I have other advisory board members that I have reached out to for guidance and assistance. And I've been very grateful that these folks have been able to answer my questions. In fact, I remember asking the former superintendent of Westville Correctional Center if he knew one of the exonerees, and he said he did not. And I said, well, he was, you know, under your charge. And he said, that's a good thing that I didn't know who he was. That means he was never in trouble. So that was an interesting, comment. But I have, I have definitely taken my experience as an advisory board and really restructured my thoughts and my approach as an advisory board member at the prison than when I had started many years ago.
When you and Mr. Glenn come on for the conversation on October 6th, is there anything in particular, besides what you've kind of mentioned with us here as we talk, but that you'd like to bring forth to the people that are participants as well as those who are watching and listening at the time?
Mr. Glenn's ordeal is very important for folks to understand how race has played a major factor in those who've been wrongfully convicted. We know that minorities, particularly African Americans, are much more likely to be wrongfully convicted. I think about this. the National Registry of Exoneration shows that about we have about 1,900 exonerees in this country. 47% are African American. And think about that, 47%, and 13% of our U.S. population are African American. So you can see how disproportionate these numbers are, right? These percentages are. We have way too many minorities sitting in prison, particularly African Americans, and we're finding that many of those who are incarcerated are there really unlawfully. They didn't commit crimes. I am on the board at the Caring Place, which is a domestic violence shelter in located in Valparaiso. And my background really has been domestic violence. And what I've found is that there is a very strong connection between domestic violence and wrongful convictions. So it's very interesting that my research has brought me to a different area of research, but they are both connected. I found that many of these folks who've been wrongfully convicted have been products of homes where domestic violence occurred. And for females who've been wrongfully convicted, the majority of them, actually everyone that I've interviewed thus far, have been they have been wrongfully convicted based on some type of an intimate crime, and later learned that no crime even existed. No crime even existed. And so these women have spent many, many years in prison for crimes that weren't even crimes. One of the things that Mr. Glenn and I are hoping, to convey to those who are attending is how being black had impacted Mr. Glenn and his experience with the criminal justice system. I want people to understand that African Americans are much more likely to be wrongfully convicted for crimes, particularly murder, sexual assault, and drug crimes. In fact, innocent black people are 7 times more likely to be convicted of murder than white people. So those are innocent black people. And there's a host of reasons for that, but one of the factors that plays a role in why innocent black people are convicted of murder more so than white people is due to unconscious bias and due to explicit racism. Crime that we see high rates of folks who are wrongfully convicted, particularly African Americans, is sexual assault. Blacks are 3.5 times more likely to be exonerated for sexual assault. And what leads to these African Americans who are innocent being wrongfully convicted in sexual assault cases is mistaken identification. Unfortunately, victims wrongly identify the perpetrator. And then the third type of crime where we see high rates of wrongful conviction by race is we see blacks are much more likely to be convicted. In fact, they're 12 times more likely to be wrongfully convicted for drug crimes. Yet blacks and whites, studies have shown that blacks and whites can use drugs at similar rates, but blacks are 5 times more likely to go to prison. And the reason we see more blacks going to prison for drug crimes than whites, even though they're committing them at the same rate, is that police are more likely to arrest African Americans than whites. Moreover, they're more likely to patrol areas where African Americans reside compared to whites. So we have to make some changes. There has to be some reform. And one of the things that Mr. Glenn and I will be talking about are some of the concerns that we have about the criminal justice system and its biases. We know that in Chicago, there was a commander, Detective Burge, John Burge, who in the early 90s, late 80s, I believe it was late 80s, mm-hmm. was torturing young African-American males into false confessions. He was forcing them to confess to crimes that they did not commit. And this was, this was happening, and people were not speaking up. And I think it's it's time for change. It's time for change, and we need some reform. And we want to make sure that the right people are in prison for who've committed these crimes and not the wrong people. And these African-American males and females who have been wrongfully convicted have spent many, many decades in prison while the real perpetrator has been out on the street. Mistaken identification is the leading factor in sexual assault cases with among African-American males. So we have victims who mistakenly identify the perpetrator because based on dark skin, whatever type of hair, but they typically mistakenly identify African-American males. And we found that's a huge problem. It's a huge problem among sexual assault victims. They are wrongly identifying their perpetrators, particularly in cases where the perpetrator has been African-American.
Well, Dr. Jackson, thank you for what you tell us now. And we're looking forward to your presentation working alongside Roosevelt Glenn, the exoneree, on the topic that you're going to bring up with the conversation series October 6th. And it's entitled Race and Wrongful Convictions. And I'm sure that it will fit in nicely with the rest of the series that begins on September 3rd that you and your colleagues with Purdue University Northwest will be able to offer to anybody that views it on Zoom. And thank you for speaking with us today about it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Professor Nikki Jackson is a professor of criminal justice at Purdue University Northwest. She's been involved in the issues of wrongful convictions, and that is why she is going to be one of the participants in the series that begins on September 3rd that you can see on Zoom as well as join on Facebook Live as well. The other people that are going to be participating from Purdue University Northwest include Professor Lee Arts. He's a professor of communication. He'll be on November 3rd talking about media framing and the politics of racism. And then the series will wrap up on November 30th with Professor Kim Skypes, who's a professor of sociology, on how to talk about race in the 21st century. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we'll talk with the Indiana Director of the National Federation of Independent Business, Barbara Quant, with the latest information on how small businesses are recovering these days in Indiana in the time of the coronavirus pandemic. We'll also revisit a conversation about a Kelley School of Business program that's established to help small businesses digitally, those that don't have a digital presence already. And Gary Dick from Inside Indiana Business has a special feature about the economy. That's and more coming up. We hope you'll join us tomorrow.